Greetings, everyone. Again, thanks for participating. On Friday, we looked into the underlying nature of the material universe, primarily from the point of view of science, which is essentially the point of view of mind, which is conceptual. And we noted during this inquiry that transformation occurs within fields of energy that are constantly changing and transforming as energy animates, moves, and expresses as material form. Yesterday, we inquired into the nature of mind, a more recent phenomenon in terms of evolutionary time that brings holographic images to light in human beings. And we noted that as marvelous as the functionality of mind is, the evolution of the human brain that interprets energy appearing now into concepts of mind presented a problem of limitation concerning the underlying nature of pure conscious awareness in humankind. Today, we're going to inquire into the nature of pure awareness and pure presence, which is beyond the capability of mind to either conceive or understand. And in this regard, let's first be clear that pure awareness does not transform, just as the human mind does not transform. Energy of which awareness is aware transforms. Awareness is simply aware of the transformational process as such appears in consciousness. Likewise, pure presence does not transform or become anything at all. Pure presence is simply felt when pure awareness is intensely here now. We'll delve more deeply into the nature of pure presence later today. Yesterday, we noted that the essential problem that the evolution of mind has brought about in human beings is that humans have become so fascinated with concepts, images, and thoughts that we tend to look to the content of mind and study from the standpoint of mind to discover ever more conceptualized answers to everything under the sun, including why do we continue to be so anxious, fearful, depressed, inconsiderate, violent, and greedy in daily life? Why are we so angry and warlike with one another? Why are we destroying the planet on which we live? Rather than looking deeply and seriously within ourselves to find out what the real problem is. Awareness is not fearful, violent, greedy, or corrupt. Human beings are fearful, violent, greedy, and corrupt. So how has this come about? How is it that human beings, who are endowed with this unique and wonderful capacity to experience the world of images and thoughts, how is it that we continue to be so far removed from the experience of compassion and love, from empathy and kindness, and from the presence of pure awareness in daily life? Awareness is not hateful, fearful, anxious, or depressed. Awareness is simply aware of the experience of these tendencies that arise within us and all the confusion and complications that follow it. We are aware of this. So how is it that humans, since the advent and evolution of the human brain and mind, continue to fall into this trap that brings with it the weight of discord, greed, and corruption, when compassion and love is the obvious resolution to virtually every problem of this nature that appears in the psyche of humankind? I'm going to repeat this. Compassion and love is the obvious resolution to virtually every problem of this nature that appears in the psyche of humankind. So today, we're going to inquire into the nature of what is generally referred to as enlightenment or enlightened being. What does it mean to be enlightened? What does it mean to awaken unto the truth of what is? What is presence? The presence of love and peace that, as Paul noted in biblical times, is beyond the understanding of mind. How does one recognize or realize the true nature of pure awareness, of this that is actually so? Is there anything one can do to bring the reality of this here now into the forefront of conscious being? Is it possible to simply perceive that which appears, absent judgment, absent a reaction of any kind to that which appears? Is it possible to simply be present and purely aware, and thereby allow love and peace, rather than concepts of mind, to be in the foreground of conscious being, therefore in the foreground of daily life? As we previously said, the reality of the presence of pure awareness is not a conceptual reality, which means it's impossible for the mind to conceptualize what it's like to live openly and freely in what we might call an enlightened state of being, or to conceptualize the intensity and immensity of pure presence, or the warmth, compassion, and beauty of pure love. The human mind is incapable of realizing realities that are beyond the scope of mental cognition. This is a fact that cannot rightly be denied. So today, we're going to look into the nature of what I'm arbitrarily referring to as three aspects of enlightened being, all of which, in their own way, help to bring about greater clarity within as to our true nature, absent the content of mind in play. The first aspect is awakening. An awakening, in essence, is a sudden insight into the true nature of being, the true nature of what actually is so. Awakenings crack open the door, so to speak, to realizations in pure conscious awareness that otherwise go unnoticed and therefore ignored in daily life, which is the ignorance that remains prevalent in humankind. The second aspect of enlightened being is what Krishnamurti called the process, which is the transformational process that brings ever greater clarity to light over time. The organic aspect of this process occurs through the evolution and transformation of the biological organism. And the illuminating aspect of this process occurs as ever greater clarity comes to light. So there is a transformation of the physical embodiment, coupled with the unveiling of the truth of what is, occurring as one whole movement, one might say, in the evolution of conscious awareness within humankind. And the third aspect of enlightened being is the realization of pure presence that comes into being when the energy of the body-mind organism is harmonic and coherent, and the mind is still. This level of presence, if I can call it that, is generally more intense than what is often referred to as simply being present in the here and now. So the first aspect, what does it mean to awaken? Unlike the relatively slow-moving development of the human brain from childhood to maturity, awakenings occur suddenly, without warning, when one least expects it, or more likely, doesn't expect it at all. Awakenings are less about a process and more about spontaneous combustion that displaces the limitations of mind momentarily, creating breakthroughs, so to speak, like when a flash of lightning breaks through from the atmosphere to the ground. This means that awakenings cannot be sought or cultivated through the practice of rituals or by engaging in philosophical study or by holding on to pious beliefs or through any pursuit that is rooted in the activity of mind. Awakenings do not come through the mind. They come in a flash when the mind is absolutely still. Awakenings are, in essence, what one might call acts of grace, which means they are not triggered by any practice, effort, or struggle engaged in by an imagined egoic entity that can one believes is me. No separate entities exist anywhere in the universe, right? He covered this ground previously. The only place an egoic me exists is in one's mind that holds to self-centered experience. And concepts of mind, in and of themselves, are incapable of doing, creating, or believing anything that leads to realizations in pure conscious awareness. Consequently, awakenings only occur outside the purview of mind, beyond what the mind can ascertain or understand. Laozi, or Lao Tzu, as he is more commonly known today, a 6th century BCE so-called philosopher in ancient China, is said to have written a book entitled The Tao Te Ching, which translated means the book of the way. And in this book, he made this essential point. Do you have the patience to wait till your mind settles and the water is clear? Can you remain unmoving till the right action arises by itself? This is another way of saying, can you wait patiently until an act of grace occurs? Awakenings are, in effect, sudden shifts of perception during which the illusion of separateness collapses and aspects of the true nature of life and the universe and of pure conscious awareness, absent the false sense of separateness, are unveiled. For most of us, initial awakenings are short-lived. Even so, in an instant, the revelations that typically occur are deeper and more profound than a lifetime of acquired knowledge will ever bring about. But in the aftermath of an awakening, the doorway, so to speak, to the underlying truth of what is made ajar, such that ongoing attachments to the content of mind tend to diminish, weaken, and ultimately die away. And as ever more insights continue to occur, ever greater clarity moves into the foreground of consciousness as well. One of the earliest recorded incidences of what I sometimes call grand mal awakenings that have occurred in a rare few occurred in Siddhartha Gautama, later known as the Buddha, which means the awakened one, around 530 BCE, when he was 35 years old. One day, while meditating under a fig tree, suddenly. An awakening occurred that transformed his being from then on. A book of his teachings, known as the Dhammapada, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, was not written by the Buddha, but like the books of the New Testament, was written by devotees years after his death. It includes many verses that still ring true today, speaking to the nature of enlightened being. One devotee, or a devotee, wrote, "His mind becomes calm. His word and deed are calm. Such is the state of tranquility of one who has attained deliverance through the realization of truth." And another, "Awake, be not heedless, follow the truth. He who embarks upon the path of truth lives happily in this world." And one more, "He whose appetites are stilled, who is not absorbed in enjoyment, who has perceived void and unconditioned freedom, his path is difficult to understand." About 500 years later, Jesus of Nazareth. A carpenter by trade. At about age 30, was with John the Baptist at the River Jordan when suddenly, as described years later in the metaphorical language of his culture and time, he saw the heavens open and the Spirit like a dove descending upon him. And after spending some time in the wilderness, which is a biblical term commonly used to point to the inner workout, one might say, that purifies one's consciousness, allowing for greater clarity to come to life, Jesus began to teach. And among other pointers, spoke of what was to come, evolutionarily speaking, regarding realizations in pure conscious awareness within humankind. By the way, the phrases, this is a little aside here, "driven into the wilderness and 40 days and 40 nights that appear numerous times in biblical lore in both the Old and New Testament. The phrase "driven in the wilderness," as I just indicated, most often is a reference to the transformational process that occurs within as one comes out of the wilderness unto the light. And one's consciousness is purified, one might say, as greater clarity comes to light. And the phrase 40 days and 40 nights was commonly used to denote an extended period of time that was not actually limited to 40 days and nights, during which the transformational process takes place that never really comes to an end, but leads to new beginnings over time. The problem in the case of Jesus, as with most others in the cultures of ancient times, was that few understood his message. "Prepare ye the way," John the Baptist taught, but inner preparation such as this was severely lacking in his time. Instead, people were looking for a savior, a person to lead them to the promised land in place and time. But this is not what the teachings of Jesus were about. Even the few disciples who were close to him and followed him during his brief ministry did not truly understand him. It wasn't until Paul, whose initial awakening occurred while on the road to Damascus, that the truth of what Jesus was pointing to were realized within him as well. Suddenly, he understood. It was not about a personal savior who would lead them to a promised land, but about awakening unto the living truth of what is. And Paul was in the wilderness 13 years before he began to teach. In a letter to the Romans, Paul wrote about the nature of awakenings in the language of his culture and time in this way. It is high time to awake out of sleep. For now is our salvation nearer than when we believe. The day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. Not revealed to us or for us, as most modern translations of the Bible say, but revealed in us, as Paul's letter actually said. 16 centuries later, a Spanish priest named John Jeppes, known historically as St. John of the Cross, wrote a book entitled Dark Night of the Soul, in which he described his initial awakening in this way. This kind of a vision is not the same with the intellectual visions of bodily things. It consists in comprehending or seeing with the understanding of the truths of God. So if we restate this pointer in language that we customarily use today, we might say that St. John's awakening was not a vision generated of mind, but rather an insight into the truth of what is. And the truth of what is, in John's words, is the understanding of the truths of God. Jacob Boehme, a 17th century so-called mystic, wrote a biography in which he described his awakening in the language of his culture and time in this way. While I was wrestling and battling between being aided by God, a wonderful light arose within my soul. It was a light entirely foreign to my unruly nature, but in it I recognized the true nature of God and man and the relation existing between them, something heretofore I had never understood and for which I would never have sought. So Jacob, who was a shoemaker by trade, is describing, in essence, a sudden shift of perception that took place within him, a spontaneous awakening that he did not seek, in which he recognized the true nature of God and man. This is another way of saying, in the language and culture of our time, that in that moment, he recognized the truth of what is. There have been numerous others, of course, far too many to mention here. But are we beginning to see the evolutionary trend of awakenings occurring ever more frequently within humankind? Which leads us to two more enlightened beings of our culture and time, both of whom you are no doubt familiar with to one degree or another, who thankfully wrote of their initial awakenings. The first is Eckhart Tolle, author of The Power of Now and A New Earth, who described his initial awakening, that was a grand mal awakening for sure, in this way. One night, not long after my 29th birthday, I woke up in the early hours with a feeling of absolute dread. Everything felt so alien, so hostile, and so utterly meaningless that it created in me a deep loathing of the world. What was the point in continuing to live with this burden of misery? A deep longing for annihilation, for non-existence, was much stronger than the instinctive desire to continue to live. I cannot live with myself any longer. This was the thought that kept repeating itself in my head. Then suddenly, there's that word suddenly again, I became aware of what a peculiar thought that was, Am I one or two? If I cannot live with myself, there must be two of me, the I and the self that I cannot live with. Maybe, I thought, only one of them is real. I was so stunned by this strange realization that my mind stopped. There is the stillness of mind again. I was fully conscious, but there were no more thoughts. Then I felt drawn into what seemed like a vortex of energy. It was a slow movement at first and then accelerated. I was gripped by an intense fear and my body started to shake. I heard the words, resist nothing. There are those words, do not resist again, as if spoken inside my chest. It felt as if I was being sucked into a void, and the void was inside myself. Here again is the message, similar to Paul's, that transformation occurs within. Suddenly, there was no more fear. There's the word suddenly in there. And I let myself fall into the void. I have no recollection of what happened after that. The next morning, this is Eckhart still speaking, I was awakened by the chirping of a bird outside the window. I had never heard such a sound before. I opened my eyes. The first light of dawn was filtering through the curtains. Without any thought, I knew that there is infinitely more to light than we realize. That soft luminosity filtering through the curtains was love itself. Tears came into my eyes. I got up and walked around. I recognized the room, and yet I had never truly seen it before. Everything was fresh and pristine, as if it had just come into existence. I picked up things, a pencil, an empty bottle, marveling at the beauty and aliveness of it all. For the next 5 months, I lived in a state of uninterrupted, deep peace and bliss. I'm going to say to you, Linda Cohen, that we just spoke, you asked of this yesterday, and this is a very unusual circumstance in which someone, as Eckhart is saying, that he lived in a state of this unique bliss for 5 months. After that, it diminished somewhat in intensity, or perhaps it just seemed to diminish because it became my natural state. I could still function in the world, although I realized that nothing I ever did could possibly add anything to what I already was. It wasn't until several years later, after I had read spiritual texts and spent time with spiritual teachers, that I realized that what everybody was looking for had happened in me. Just as Paul wrote, I understood that the intense pressure of suffering that night must have forced my consciousness to withdraw from its identification with the unhappy and deeply fearful egoic self, which is ultimately a fiction of mine. The withdrawal must have been so complete that the false, suffering self immediately collapsed, as if a plug had been pulled out of an inflatable toy. What was left was my true nature, as the ever-present I am. Consciousness in its pure state prior to identification with form. What Alan was talking about yesterday. So Eckhart confirms what Paul wrote more than 2,000 years ago. that the creature itself shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. Both Eckhart and Paul, writing in the language of their culture and time, were pointing to the same truth, the same reality, that the illusion of separateness, which is not the truth of what is corrupted by the limitations of mind, and that awakening unto the truth of what is delivers one unto the glorious liberty of the children of God. The children of God being the I am, or I am-ness, or am-ness of conscious being. And the am-ness of conscious being is realized in the presence of pure awareness. Pure presence, pure awareness, pure being. This is what actually is so in the here and now, absent the content of mind in play. So now we come to Krishnamurti. Who described his initial awakening, which, like Eckhart's, was a grand mal awakening, in this way. I felt acute pain at the nape of my neck, and the pain, instead of getting better, grew worse. I could not think, nor was I able to do anything, so I was forced by friends here in Ojai to retire to bed. I was almost unconscious, though I was well aware of what was happening around me. And while I was in that state, I had the first most extraordinary experience. There was a man mending the road. The man was myself. The pickaxe he held was myself. The very stone which he was breaking up was a part of me. The tender blade of grass was my very being. And the tree beside the man was myself. I could feel and think like the road mender, and feel the wind passing through the tree, and the little ant on the blade of grass. The birds, the dust, and the noise were a part of me. There was a car passing by at some distance. I was the driver, the engine, and the tires. And as the car went further away from me, I was nothing. I was going away from myself. I was in everything, or rather, everything was in me, inanimate and animate, the mountain, the worm, and all breathing things. All day long, I remained in this happy condition. In essence, Krishnamurti is describing the presence of pure awareness abiding in the foreground of consciousness all day long. The morning of the next day, I wandered out on the veranda and sat a few moments, exhausted and slightly calmer. I began to come to myself and was asked to go under the pepper tree, which is near the house. There I sat cross-legged in a meditative posture. There was a profound calmness in the air and within myself, the calmness of the bottom of a deep, unfathomable lake. This again is a reference to the stillness within. Like the lake, my physical body with its mind and emotions could be ruffled on the surface, but nothing could disturb the calmness of my soul. This presence was with me for some time. Here he used the word presence for the first time. I was supremely happy, for I had seen. This is a nod to insight into the truth of what is. Nothing could ever be the same. Never more could I be in utter darkness. I have seen the glorious, healing light. These words could have been written by Paul. The fountain of truth has been revealed. I have touched compassion, which heals all sorrow and suffering. It is not for myself, but for the world. suddenly, in an instant, the body mind organism of Krishnamurti, like Eckhart's, was transformed. And throughout his initial awakening, a realization of the oneness of all that is remained in the foreground of consciousness. I am the man mending the road. I am the stone and the tender blade of grass and the tree and the wind passing through the tree and the ant of the blade in the grass. The birds, the dust, and the noise are all a part of me. In other words, amness is all that truly is. Krishnamurti later acknowledged that even after his initial awakening, the sense of a separate self had not yet fully passed away. So it seemed at the time that his initial awakening, along with others that followed, occurred within the context of an entity he still thought of as me. It wasn't until later, he said, that the sense of separateness and of a separate self finally passed away entirely. So even in one as highly enlightened as Krishnamurti, the complete loss of a sense of a separate self did not fully collapse until he acknowledged later he was 15 years of age. Had Jesus lived that long, he might have acknowledged the same thing. Initial awakenings, in terms of conscious awareness, are so radically different from the typical self-centered point of view that in the aftermath of an awakening, the sense of an egoic me gradually returns, but with less of a foothold than before, as ongoing attachments to constructs of mind continue to weaken and pass away. Which is why, on this one point, I want to be clear. Awareness does not awaken. Awareness is already awake. One simply awakens under the presence of pure awareness. One is offered a glimpse, one might say, unto the truth of what is by means of light. Most of us, including the speaker, do not experience initial awakenings on as grand a scale as the two we just now reviewed. But we experience awakenings to varying degrees nonetheless. And with each awakening, insight or unveiling, regardless of the scale or degree, the human energy field in which the awakenings occur is transformed in ways that we know not, as ever more clarity comes to light. In the aftermath of more typical awakenings, concepts, thoughts, and emotions, as interpreted of mind, reappear, but old attachments to such appearances are weaker and less pronounced than before. And as attachments to egoic points of view subside, the light of truth increasingly shines through. And as the light of truth shines through, the illusion of separateness fades, leaving in its wake more than just a glimpse, but actualized realizations of the presence of pure awareness and pure peace, uncorrupted, as Paul would say, by egoic attachments to concepts of mind, even though concepts continue to appear. Awakenings, regardless of the degree or intensity, are inevitably followed by a heightened sense of liberation, as Paul and others put it, from the false sense of a separate self. And as ever more clarity comes to light, the egoic sense of a separate self weakens and dies away, allowing for deeper, more profound realizations to occur. Until at some point during the transformational process, the egoic sense of a separate me, as Krishnamurti noted, collapses entirely. Pure awareness, like the light of physics, is present everywhere at once within all material expression, but is especially present within the body-mind organism of human beings. And as ever more awakenings occur within human beings, the true nature of what is illuminated by the light of pure awareness that is present within. Never in the past or future, but always now. As John the Baptist put it, the truth of what is unveiled unto those who are prepared, not by any effort, practice, or belief generated of mind, but by the simple yet profound act of awakening, naturally, effortlessly, spontaneously, like a budding flower opening unto the light of day. Let's take a moment and just rest in awareness. And now we come to the second aspect, the transformational process. Terence Gray, known historically as Wei Wu Wei, noted in his writings that there is a difference between awakening and deliverance. The former is sudden, but deliverance is gradual. Krishnamurti described deliverance from the false sense of separateness as a process that he physically endured in varying degrees of intensity for more than 50 years, some of which he said was simply physical pain that was unique to his particular body-mind organism. This is what Alan was bringing out yesterday. But other aspects, he said, were transformational in nature, as energy increasingly expressed itself more coherently and intelligently within him. Regarding the evolutionary process, Krishnamurti acknowledged that he never fully understood all that took place within him, or at least he did not know how to describe it as accurately as he might. When asked about this, he sometimes admitted that he did not know, but at other times he described his process in terms of good or bad energy at work, the good being kundalini energy, he said, and the bad being energy that caused severe physical pain, both of which occurred coincidentally with revelations in pure awareness within him. But in truth, this is me talking here, there is no such thing as good or bad energy. There is only energy expressing now, doing what energy does. And one is simply aware of the goings on, or not. There is no need to label it bad or good, one way or the other. It just is energy, moving in the here and now, in one way or another, and nothing more. This aside, Krishnamurti also declared that for clarity to come, there must be a transformation, which he called a radical change in the field, These are his words, not mine. So in this way, he acknowledged that transformation occurs in the field, not in awareness of the field. Awareness remains internally present and aware. Recognition of this fact is the key that opens the door to ever greater clarity. And ever greater clarity comes into being as the body-mind organism transforms. And as the body-mind organism transforms, not only does ever greater clarity come into being, but also a sense of liberation and lightheartedness occurs, as the sense of repression brought on by the false sense of egoic separateness dissipates and dies away. Krishnamurti once told a relative that his transformational process seemed to cleanse his consciousness, allowing for ever greater clarity to come into the foreground of conscious being. Krishnamurti also said that the depth and length of time that it took for the process to cleanse his consciousness was unique to him, and that others would not likely experience the degree of pain and suffering that he went through as the transformative process plays out. So, in effect, he's saying, worry not to any who might be concerned. The key, it seems, to the unveiling of living truth within is how one psychologically approaches the transformational process, as the many and varied attachments to constructs of mind that reside in the field are systematically removed as well as revealed. Is there resistance to the process that is wanting to occur in the field? Is there denial created of mind? Is there avoidance also created of mind? Or is there an allowing and a letting go as the transformational process, like a flower, unfolds unto the light of pure winds? The root cause of psychological suffering, as Krishnamurti also declared, is the movement of desire. While the objects of desire might change, the feeling, the weight, the pressure, the darkness of desire does not change until the whole movement of desire, the beliefs, the hopes, the aspirations, and the greediness brought about by ongoing attachments to the content of mind, let go. The essence of intelligence, Krishnamurti said, is to be without desire. Twelve years after his initial awakening, Krishnamurti was asked, how did you come to that state of unity with everything? And he replied, in pertinent part, that my inner awareness was always there, though it took time to feel it more clearly. He used the word feel to describe inner awareness. Feel the presence of pure awareness is what I'm saying here. And equally, I'm quoting Krishnamurti again, it took time to find words that would describe it. It was not a sudden flash. This is the process he's speaking to, but a slow yet constant clarification of something that was always there. 28 years later, he again shared with a colleague that his transformation took place over time. Most specifically, he declared, I was not fully enlightened until 1950, when he was 55 years old. This is not your average Joe talking. This is Krishnamurti, world teacher, declaring this. Thankfully for us, beginning in 1961 and for 8 months thereafter, Krishnamurti kept a diary that was published 15 years later under the title Krishnamurti's Notebook. Some of you might be familiar, in which he described, as best he could, the pure presence that he experienced within him, what it was like to be him outside the ordinary world, as he put it, and to be completely at peace. Again, his words, not mine, without conflict of any kind. He noted importantly that this was not a constant state, though it came upon him with some regularity, and that it was impossible to fully describe to anyone who had not experienced the same reality directly. He variously referred to pure presence as the other, or the immensity, or the vastness, or the goodness, or the sacredness, or the benediction, or the beauty, or love, peace, and glory, or calmness, or stillness. These are all words he used to point to the presence of pure awareness, absent any attachment to the workings of mind. And again, I want to emphasize the presence of pure awareness that Krishnamurti is pointing to is not a reality that is seen or visualized or understood in the same manner that awakenings typically are realized within. Presence is felt, not seen, which is why he described pure presence in terms of its intensity or immensity, rather than, did you see that presence the other day? It's not a visual occurrence. Krishnamurti sometimes asked others who were in his presence, do you feel it? And they either replied yes or no, depending on whether the presence that he was feeling was felt in them too. Pure presence is not an insight, nor is it an object of mind. So, this said, the following are excerpts from Krishnamurti's notebook that speak to the nature of pure presence. June 20, 1961. In the car on the way to Ojai, again it began, the feeling of immense vastness. One was not experiencing this vastness. It was simply there. There was no center from which or in which the experience was taking place. June 21. There was a great expanding ecstasy. This joy continues. The brain became very quiet, quivering, fully alive. Every sense was alert. The eyes were seeing the bee on the window, the spider, the birds, and the violet mountains in the distance. There was seeing, but the brain was not recording them. June 29th. It is as though deep within an operation was going on. It's not brought on through one's own volition, however subtle it might be. One has tried to induce it, tried to bring it about through various outward conditions, being alone and so on. But then nothing happens. July 2nd. There was exaggerated, emotionally agitated talk going on around him, when suddenly, in the middle of it, the presence was there. and it's here now. There's a beauty and a glory and a sense of wordless ecstasy. July 9th. While on a plane with other passengers, most unexpectedly, the sense of immensity and that extraordinary benediction, that imminent feeling of sacredness began to take place. As the eyes were closed, the body, the brain seemed to plunge into unfathomable depths, into states of incredible sensitivity and beauty. There was no continuity. There was only being. July 12th. This timeless expanding was taking place, and the quality and degree of intensity are wholly different from passion and feeling. It was an intensity that was totally unrelated to any desire, wish, or experience that was rushing through the brain. July 13th. Last night, after a long and lovely drive through the mountains country, on entering the room, that strange sacred blessing was there. The others felt it too. The others also felt the quiet of the penetrating atmosphere. There is a feeling of great beauty and love and of mature fullness. Last one, July 20th. The process was particularly intense yesterday. The room became full with the benediction. What followed is almost impossible to put down in words. It was the center of creation. It was a purifying seriousness that cleansed the brain of every thought and feeling. The profundity of it was not measurable. It was there, immovable, impenetrable. For presence to be in the foreground of conscious being, the mind must be still. And in that stillness, the illusion of separateness disappears. Not necessarily forevermore, but disappears in the presence of pure awareness here now. This reality, this presence, is unrealizable from the standpoint of mind, because pure awareness is not a state of mind, but is simply, purely present. Absent attachment to any state of mind at all. Realizing presence is not about realizing the perfect concept or cognizing the absolute, but is about realizing the truth of what is in the here and now, which is other than the content of mind, other than the egoic sense of separateness, which is an illusion of mind. Pure awareness does not identify with concepts, images, or states of mind. Pure awareness, like light, is simply present and aware in all that appears. And realizing this is the key that opens the door to the truth of what is. Pure awareness of itself does not deny, resist, or avoid concepts, images, or thoughts as they appear, but rather perceives that which appears in the eternally present now without naming, isolating, or judging that which appears. Pure awareness is simply aware. The Advaita sage Ramesh Belsikar pointed to the reality of pure awareness in this way. What you appear to be is the outer body, perceiving the outer world. But what you are is consciousness in which the body and the world appear. Appearances come and go. This is me speaking now. But the presence of pure awareness remains forever unmoved by the movement of energy in space and time, as conceived of mind. The sense of a separate observer witnessing objects that appear in consciousness is the last remnant of the sense of a separate self that must ultimately die for true liberation from this false sense of a separate self to occur. And in such instances, one realizes, as Krishnamurti put it, that the observer is the observed. Pure conscious awareness is one reality, not two. Or as Ramesh put it, what is vital is not thinking about the present, but actually being the present moment. And this is nothing other than enlightenment. When the body-mind organism is no longer identified with the manifestations of mind, then love and peace is present. And when love and peace is present, there is nothing one needs to know. There is only pure being expressing through human form in the here and now. That's all. No teaching, no pointer, no practice conceived of mind leads to love and peace. Love and peace are present when the illusion of separateness is no more. To be in the presence of pure awareness is to live life as enlightened being, not in the past or future, but in the eternally present now. Realization of this truth allows love and peace to come forth freely, naturally, spontaneously, into the foreground of consciousness. Absent denial, absent resistance, absent avoidance to the truth of what is. Krishnamurti, in his diary, once described the presence of love and peace in this way. For 2 or 3 weeks, there has been this sense of heightened peace and stillness. The mind intensely aware, without any image, thought, or emotion, but a love and a tenderness that was almost overpowering. There was no sense of meditative consciousness not being there, but the other, the immense reality, this that has no name, penetrated and simply was. There was this silent intensity of being. And in this intensity, there is only being and an ever-increasing silence and immensity. End quote. Concepts arise out of fields. The pure awareness is not a field. The field is not aware. You and I, as a body-mind organism, are not aware. Awareness is aware. Pure awareness is other than that which appears in the field. Therefore, other than that which appears in consciousness. Appearances come and go within the field, while awareness remains forever present and aware. The truth of what is the I am of conscious being. To be fully present in daily life, one must cease to deny and resist the truth of what is. And as one ceases to deny and resist, one realizes the ways of love and peace. Being present here now is what it means to live as an enlightened being. Being present and aware. Realizing pure presence here and now is the essential primary purpose for the appearance of humankind.